Buzz and Mike Miller, right here on the Harmony Street Radio Show.
Hi, I'm Cleveland Still of the Doves, and I'm here with my good friend, Mike Miller, of the Harmony Street Show.
There are stars, and I look towards the sky. They shine for everyone to see. They say there's a love, a wonderful love. Is there a love for me? I gazed at the moon. Word that love was bound to be. But even with the promises from a heaven above, is there a love for me? The magic of
straight to my lover's heart.
for me. I don't mean to bother you, but I'm in distress. There's danger of me losing all of my happiness. For I love a girl who doesn't know I exist, and this you can fix. So Cupid, draw back your bow and let your arrow go straight to my lover's heart for me. Trick, trickle, splash, splash, tell me how long will this rain last? The rain keeps dropping, there ain't no stopping. Tell me how long will this rain last? Drop. She's there waiting and I'm hesitating. Tell me just when this rain will stop. Trying to dig my clothes, yeah boy. One button road. Well, you know I'm sharp as a tack. Can you lend me your Cadillac? Gotta go to the party, yeah. Please lend me your shawl. Well, if I can't take it, I know I can't make it. I won't see my baby no more.
I love you.
you love me too. What a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography, don't know much trigonometry, don't know much about algebra, don't know what a slide rule is for, but I do know one and one is two. And if this one can be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I've tried to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. La la cha 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 cha. Cha 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 cha. Yeah, but I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Just a kiss, just a smile, hold my hand once in a while. But oh, that's all I need, that's all I need, and I'll be satisfied. Think of me when you're away, call me darling just once a day. Oh, that's all I need, that's all I need, and I'll be satisfied. Oh, true love lets me know I won't forget you when you're around me. It makes me feel life is worth the living, baby. Love is so forgiving. Just a kiss, just a smile, hold my hand once in a while. Oh, that's all I need, that's all I need, and I'll be. Baby, 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 that's all I need. Oh, that's all I need.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to have as my guest the lead singer of the legendary Dubs, Mr. Leslie Anderson. How you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing great, Mike. I'm doing great. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty good, too. I mean, you know, we know each other over the years because I think just about every 3 or 4 years, you know, I got to do a show and be on stage with the Dubs, but pretty much with several different groups. I mean, my group Harmony Street, I had three ladies and two guys, and
yeah,
we did a lot of shows. As a matter of fact, something you might not know, When I moved to Florida, I had moved down because my parents were sick, and I lost my brother, my mother, and my father all within about a year in the year 2000. And every year, Harmony Street would do Danbury on the Green. And I and we couldn't do that show that year. And that was around the year 2000. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the people in charge of the Green actually called the Dubs. And I think you guys did that show on the Green that summer.
Okay, we may have.
Yeah, it was Danbury, Connecticut on the Green. Of course, you know, so many shows and so many weekends, but I'm pretty sure that was the case. Yep.
That does sound familiar.
Yeah,
that rings a vague bell. There.
Yeah, yeah, and I remember that only because, you know, I remember the circumstances, and somebody said, "Why don't we call the Dubs? I mean, they're great." You know, people, they had a great doo-wop audience there. You know.
Yeah. Well, we've worked in Danbury a few times. It's good country.
Let's get back to Leslie. You were born where?
I was actually born in Rhode Island, Newport.
Ah.
I grew up in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. I know Newport very well. When I lived in Danbury, we used to actually go to Missquamacut, I think.
Okay.
And very interestingly, we used to eat in a place called the Nordic Lodge. It was in Missquamacut. It was one of these five-star buffets, you know. Way, way back. When did you realize that you could get up and sing a really good song and have people appreciate your vocal prowess?
Well, I guess actually I had to be about 11.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I moved to Springfield when I was 7. My mom put me in the kids children's choir.
Right.
And I had to take piano lessons. And my piano teacher was also the choir director.
Uh-huh.
She gave me a solo when I was about 8.
Wow.
So I guess she saw something, but I was scared to death. Around 10, I started messing around and started singing a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And about 10 or 11, I was with a little group, and we sang in one of those Tom Thumb weddings.
Right.
And that was it.
I'll tell you, when you say, you know, you were frightened, I mean, that's a lot of pressure, because I remember when I was younger and, you know, they would push me out there and then I'd freeze up. It took me a long time until I could get out there and really felt like I felt at home on the stage and really owned the stage, you know, because I was good in large venues. Like we did the anthem at Shea Stadium, you know, that was fine because the people were far away. But, you know, sometimes in the living room with 5 people, it's even tougher to do that than it is to go out in front of 5,000.
Exactly. It is. I mean, it's much easier to do the big venues
right.
than the small ones.
Well,
so, matter of fact,
I
walk up places that I've sung and I go to sing. What's really the hardest place for me to sing is at home in front of my, like in Springfield in front of my home crowd.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I still get nervous when it comes to singing here in Springfield in front of people that I've grown up, you know, grew up with and,
yeah.
you know from childhood.
Because the mindset is that you become that little kid again and all of a sudden you turn that other switch and you become that little kid again where, you know, oh, my God, they're critiquing me and that kind of thing. When they say, and ladies and gentlemen, the Dubs, and then you go out there and it's a different mindset.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
I mean, it sounds crazy, but, you know, I think that's the truth. Now, was anybody musical in your family growing up?
Well, I had my uncle.
Right.
He was a jazz pianist.
Uh-huh.
And I had an uncle that was a jazz saxophonist.
Right.
And I had another aunt that played piano.
Right. Well.
So other than that, those were my major kind of influences within my nuclear.
Right.
Within my nuclear family.
Right. But when you have that point of reference also, you know, it helps a lot too, because I know myself, I'm playing guitar since I'm about 11 or 12 years old, and just to be able to have that point of reference and something to sing to, even when you're working out harmonies and whatever, you can see the chord and you know what should be there and what shouldn't be there. It's, yeah. You know, I mean, you know, when you're working out a tune and you've been with the guys, it's, you know, they're singing their note and say, well, the note doesn't fit in the chord. Yeah, but that's the way we sing it. Well, but the note is not in the chord. It's discord, you know. Give it up.
Yeah. And I was also fortunate. I took piano, like I said, when I moved to Springfield, I said that my mom hadn't taken piano lessons. So I took piano for a good 7 years.
Right.
I've got that background.
Yeah. It's funny. I know exactly where Springfield is. I've been through there. I've had friends there. So, you know, and the New England head is a total, it's a different kind of a head. It's not New York.
No,
it's different. As a matter of fact, I'd laugh because even in Danbury, Connecticut, going over the New York state line, I walked into the deli one time, I said, make me a hero. And the guy looked at me and he went, poof, you're a hero. And I said, so I learned that all over the country, you could have a wedge, you could have a hero, you could have a submarine, you could just have a big sandwich, but everybody calls it something different, but it's the same sandwich.
It's the same sandwich.
It's funny, man. So growing up, now, your influences actually were the Platters, and of course, you know, Herb Reed came from Boston, so, you know, that's almost a Boston thing.
Yeah.
And Frankie Lyman, of course, you know, we just lost Louie Lyman. I met Louie years ago in Jamaica, Queens at Triborough Records. I was like 17, 18 years old, and I saw this guy going through the stacks of 45s, whatever, and I looked, and it took me a while, and I realized who it was, you know, and I went over and, you know, he talked to me for about an hour and a half. I was just, you know, a 17, 18-year-old kid. You know,
very,
you know, it was great.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was, I knew he was sick.
Right.
I didn't realize he was that sick, you know.
Well, it's funny because every day we wake up and, you know, you get a phone call and you say, did you hear about so-and-so? Did you hear about so-and-so? And it's, you know, it's tough. I mean, because, you know, these are guys that, and I know you'll agree with me. When you sing, no matter what level you do it on, there are always those people that you hold in reverence, you know, even though you've done 30 shows with them, out walks so-and-so and your heart beats a little faster and you say, oh my goodness, you know, because, their music is so ingrained, you know. I'm sure you have people like that you go out on stage with that you really hold in reverence, even though you see them on a regular basis.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The name, the particular one that comes to mind, because he was such a heavy influence on me, was Little Anthony.
Oh yeah.
And I can remember working with him for the very first time.
Wow.
And then I was just like a little kid.
Oh yeah.
And we met at the show, and I was somewhat scared to even approach him.
Oh, I hear you.
I just stood at a distance, man, and, you know, like looked at this.
Oh,
dude,
I know.
This is really Little Anthony, and I'm going to be singing on the same show.
I hear you. Well, you know, he's such a sweet guy too. I mean, you know, we've been friends for many, many, many years. And of course, you know, Anthony's going through his stuff. As a matter of fact, you know, he's just recovering now. He was in the hospital for a little bit over the last couple of weeks. I don't know if you know. His appendix burst. This was about three weeks ago. Yep.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you did have some influences in your family. And of course, growing up, I'm sure you found a couple of groups to sing with, and possibly even street corner groups.
Oh yeah, I mean, Springfield was ripe with talent.
Right.
You had, there was a, you know, unfortunately we're so, you know, we're we're so far away from New York, we're kind of like isolated, so a lot of the talent never gets heard.
Right.
You know, but we had some cats here, man, that could catch a sing. We had a couple of groups, too. I mean, there was a group that recorded in the early, late 50s, around 57, called the Dream Tones.
Right.
If you ever hear any of their music, they did a thing called Love in the Afternoon.
Right.
And,
love in the afternoon. Two lovers enjoy the scene. That love was made too soon. They called it love in the afternoon. Cry the one you love tells you she's found anew. Just sit under the silvery moon and call it love in the afternoon. Let that love that stole my heart and bring those memories of you. Don't take my heart, don't take my love. I die. It's love in the afternoon. The moon gazing at the sun. The sun gazing at the moon. They call it love in the afternoon.
Another thing that had magic in the title. I'm trying to think of it offhand. These cats were like, you know, and there were some other guys that were ahead of me that I listened to and that I sang with, and they, you know, they schooled me. So, by the time I got to New York, guys would come, you know, guys would listen to me and they'd say like, oh, wow, where are you from, man? I said, that's they said, Boston. You go, yeah, got to be Boston. I'm saying, no, not Boston.
Right.
You know. Springfield, you know.
Right.
They say, Springfield. Where's Springfield?
Yeah, tell them where the rifle comes from.
You know? Yeah, I mean, there were some cats that sang, you know, cats could blow. I mean,
Right. No, I understand. You know, I grew up in Westchester, but then my father moved us to Long Island in my junior year. And I sang at all the Long Island clubs, but we had street corner groups. I had a group called the Islanders. We were on Relic Records on the best of the series that was the best of acapella. And then we got signed by MGM and we had one tune that was getting some airplay and then it kind of fizzled. So the group, instead of going back in and recording, they all just said, you know, we don't have the energy to do this. They should have kept going, but we all found a street corner, believe it or not. We just, you know, and it was all good. So, you're singing and you realize that you want to sing and then all of a sudden you were one of those guys that, got called to Vietnam. Most of my friends were going during that time when I got out of high school, and I was going to college and then I started teaching, you know, so, you know, I was a dean in the Bronx, but, you went to Vietnam.
Matter of fact, the group I sang with before I went to Vietnam, they continued on and actually, did a couple records with, Phil Scepter on one of his subsidiary records.
Wow.
Venus Records.
Uh-huh.
They were called the Quotations, so.
Right.
But my call was Vietnam.
Now, those weren't the, give me the ma-ma-ma, give me the ma-ma. That wasn't the Imagination's quotations.
No, this was they were called the quotations. Right. I never knew there was another quotation until later on.
Yeah, no, I understand. Hey, look, you know, there are so many groups like with the same name out there, you know, when you look and you go, oh my God, you know, which one was this, which one was that? But, I understand. Now, so when you came back, you know, all my friends that went there, and I don't know what kind of action you saw and I don't know what you experienced, but they all came back and it took some of them 2, 3, 4 years to just get out of that mode because they saw things that they never would have seen in the States. And it was a real traumatic experience for them. I don't know what you experienced.
War, that's the nature of war.
Right.
You know, that's the nature of war. And I was in an infantry unit.
Wow.
So, I mean, when I came back, and I went through, like most of your friends, I went through the drugs and hard drugs and jail and that whole thing. And I mean, it took me a good 5, 6 years to get my head back to
all of them. They all
back to normal, thinking I might be able to do something legitimate, or I had some kind of future in life.
Well, most of them couldn't figure out. You know, they would say to me, you know, first of all, they couldn't figure out why they needed to go there and point a gun at somebody that they didn't even know.
Exactly.
And how did I get myself into this? And also being in an environment that they weren't used to. Of course, not being able to get a foothold because it wasn't a natural progression into their livelihood, whatever it was. You kind of had to start from scratch. I know.
Yeah, I mean, and the transition was just something. It was just like, I mean, you went there. And it was different from the olden days, I mean, like World War II and Korea, where you went over as a unit.
Right.
Went over as a bunch of guys, went over there together, and then they came back together. Here, you just had orders. You went to California or you went to Washington and you got on a plane, and 24 hours later, you were in Vietnam, and then you got shipped to some unit, and you spent a year doing whatever you had to do. And then you came back to base camp and you got on a plane and 24 hours, you were back at home.
That's amazing. You know, it's funny. Lenny Welch said to me one time, he says he almost got killed because the guy next to him, you know, was, you know, he's standing there with the gun and everything. He looks and the guy next to him goes, holy shit, it's Lenny Welch, and starts a conversation with him. And Lenny's going, duck. You know, all of a sudden, this guy did this whole Lenny Welch thing. He says, now is not the time, you know? It's funny how that affected some people, you know? And then you went to the University of Mass. And
Once I got my head screwed on, I went to the University of Mass.
And you studied juvenile justice, which is very interesting because we could use you now, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was a dean for all those years and, you know, all those kids passed through and I went through years and years of not my kid, not my kid. Come on, the system is failing my kid. And the problem with that was it was everybody's job. It was the family. It was the neighborhood. It was the school. Everybody needed to do their job in order for everything to come out right, you know.
Yeah.
And not to get into that, but that was the problem. But that must have been very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so when I went to UMass, I mean, the last thing in my mind was sin. I just, you know, I had no idea or thought of sin. I went to UMass and I had just come out of jail. I had gotten involved with education. I got involved with my GI Bill.
Right.
And, I was heading towards being a probation officer or possibly a lawyer or, you know, whatever, you know. But singing was the last thing on my mind.
Wow. Yeah, but you know, I'll tell you, you know and I know that once you have it in your blood, it's like it comes out even if you're just singing in the car, singing in the shower, even though you weren't ready to step out and be on stage. I'm sure that, you know, you rolled the windows up and you sang to whatever tune, you know, was coming at you, or you sang in the shower, or, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, because.
What happened was I got there, and I got involved with some other friends.
Right.
And I just, they had this, it was crazy, man. We had like, Max Roach.
Right.
A whole lot of music figures that were in UMass, music department.
Right.
And they had a choir. It was a one credit course called Voices of New Africa House.
Uh-huh.
And I just, a friend of mine persuaded me to come, you know, to come check this choir out.
Right.
And I decided to join it just for some relaxation, because I knew I could sing. And I was just looking for a break, you know, from the monotony of classes, working in juvenile justice. So I said, okay, this might be a little, you know, ease some of the stress. So I'm going to get involved with this choir.
Right.
Do this one credit course. And that was it. Slowly the bug bit and took over.
Right. And so the Voices of New Africa, tell me a little bit about, you know, what the makeup was and what kind of music you were doing and what that was all about.
It was basically a gospel choir. And it was initially run by Max Roach, the drummer.
Right.
And then they hired a guy named Dr. Boyer, who was a professional gospel singer as a kid.
Right.
And then he went on to school and got his doctorate. He was now a professor, and they brought him in to take over the choir. And he also had a position in the music department. So in getting involved in the choir, I got involved with him. And we used to do concerts, and we did some touring during spring breaks and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And then while I was involved in there, another friend of mine that I sang with, in the quotations before I went to the service, he was at the campus.
Right.
And we got together and we formed another vocal group called Reconstruction.
Uh-huh.
And, we started singing again. We were doing clubs on the side and, you know,
and
one thing led to another, and we decided that we were there to get a degree.
What kind of music were you doing with Reconstruction?
We were doing rhythm and blues.
Oh, okay, so straight R&B.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Straight up R&B, and then we would do some jazz, variety, and, you know, like nightclub. We had a whole nightclub act.
So basically with that group now, you actually opened up for Natalie Cole and Ella Fitzgerald, I heard.
Yeah, we did. We opened up for, Natalie. We opened up for, Ella Fitzgerald. So we did things, you know, we had developed a nightclub act, and we did stuff around the East Coast. We did clubs up and down the East Coast, you
wow.
know, when we had breaks and stuff.
Wow. I mean, hey, listen, how old were you then?
Oh, I was getting to be an old man then. I was like 20, 25, 26.
Well, okay, but you know what? Being on a stage with Natalie Cole and being on a stage with Ella, I mean, that's, you know, how many people can say that they actually shared a stage with Ella Fitzgerald? I mean, that's, you know.
That's a memory that goes, that's a lifelong memory.
Do you have any pictures, or did you not take any?
We didn't take any. I have one picture with us on stage.
Uh-huh.
We had a top hat and canes.
Oh, wow.
Don't Get Around Much Anymore by Duke Ellington.
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, we did that in that set with her.
You know, I love that kind of music too. I mean, I used with different shows that I've done, I mean, I used to pick tunes sometimes that were not in the mainstream. I don't know if there's a Billy Eckstine tune called You've Changed. You know the song?
Yeah.
I love that song, man.
You've changed.
that sparkle in your eye is gone. Your smile is just a careless yawn. You're breaking my heart, you've changed. You changed. Your kisses are so blasé. You're bored with me in every way. It's all over now. You've changed. You've forgotten the words I love you. Each memory that we share, you ignore every star above you. I can't believe you ever cared. You've changed. You're not the angel I once knew. No need to tell me that we're through. You're breaking my heart. You've changed. Forgotten the words I love you. Each memory that we share, you ignore every star above you. I can't realize you ever cared. You've changed. You're not the angel I once knew. No need to tell me that we're through. You're breaking my heart. You've changed. You've changed. You've changed. You've changed.
And it's funny, you don't hear it much, but every time, every once in a while, somebody will do it, and I go, wow, you know, that some of that 40s stuff and that late 30s stuff is like, I mean, it's just so good, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, I really got turned on to that as a kid, when Little Anthony, because I was Little Anthony fan.
Right.
And I think their second or third album was Shades of the 40s.
Right.
And they did all songs from the 40s. That's why we got Don't Get Around Much Anymore.
You know, he told me something once. I said, you know, when I was younger, I said, we used to go to the shows at the Brooklyn Fox, you know, Murray the K, and we'd go in and we'd get into the show and it would already be full, you know, because they stood on line like half the night. And then you'd get in and you'd see the movie and then the show. And then some of us would move down. So by the time we got to the third show, we'd be in the first two rows. I said, we'd see the show like three times. You know, the first show was at 10 o'clock in the morning and then you'd get home at midnight. I said, but it was funny because everybody in the theater smoked in those days and nobody told you to put the cigarette out. So I says, didn't the smoke bother you? So Anthony said, are you kidding me, man? He says, I would put the cigarette out on the heel of my shoe before we went out to sing, man. Before we went out on stage, I'd put that cigarette out right on my heel and then we go out. So, you know, I was blowing smoke back in their face. So I said, really? He says, yeah, absolutely. In those days, everybody smoked, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny, man. But, You know, that was then.
For the world, it doesn't seem much. Ask me for the moon, dear, and I'll reach out to touch. Do anything for you, dear, only. But please don't ask me to be lonely. For the stars, dear, and I'll fulfill your demands. Ask me for the diamonds, I'll put them on your hand. Do anything for you, dear, only. But please don't ask me to be lonely. I searched this world, this whole wide world, looking for a girl such as you. Stars, dear, and I'll fulfill your demands. Ask me for the diamonds, I'll put them on your hand. Do anything for you, dear, only. But please don't ask me to be lonely. I
I searched this this world is all wide world. Looking well for a girl such as you.
Stars be, and I'll fulfill your demands. Ask me for the diamonds, I'll put them on your hand. Do anything for you, for you, dear only. But please don't ask me to be lonely. I search this world, this whole wide world, looking well for a girl such as you.
So, tell me about Rock and Roll Heaven.
Okay, so what happened? I grabbed. We decided to put Reconstruction on hold for a while,
right?
So we could finish. So we could get our degrees and finish, you know, finish school,
right?
So we did that. But after we graduated, we didn't get back together. A couple of the guys wanted to do some other things, so I wound up going into graduate school,
right?
And then after I got to my master's, I decided to take a break, a guy told me about this guy in Pennsylvania. So I went out to Pennsylvania, a guy named Gabe Gowan. He was a director of a big band during the big band days.
Right.
And he put groups together and sent them out to Vegas and sent them out on the hotel circuit.
Right.
Like, you know, back in the days of the Sheridans and the Big Westerns.
Oh, yeah.
So he had a... He had a group called Rock and Roll Heaven. They had disbanded, and he was putting another group, Rock and Roll Heaven, back together again.
Uh-huh.
So I went out there and I auditioned, and I made the audition. He told me if I wanted to join the band, you know, he would take me in, no guarantee.
Wow.
But my job in the group was to do. I did Sam Cooke, Jackie Wilson.
Right.
At that time, just for a show, I did a little bit of Michael Jackson, because Michael Jackson was real big.
Wow.
So during the dance sets, I would do some Michael Jackson. But in terms of Rock and Roll Heaven, I did the Ink Spots,
wow,
Sam Cooke, and Jackie Wilson.
Well, it's tough being the Jackie Wilson guy, man, because he's pretty tough to cop. So if you're in that elite bunch, you know when they say, and now, ladies and gentlemen, you know, a couple of Jackie Wilson tunes, you got to be there. If you're not there, everybody goes, nah. Or they go,
yeah.
Or they go, yeah. You know,
yeah.
So that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. So that's how I got into Rock and Roll Heaven. We toured the country for about a year or so.
Wow.
I came to New York. I was on my way back here to Massachusetts to go back to graduate school.
Right.
I decided to go to New York first and just hang out for a little while. I had a friend that was living there, so we said, just come on here, man, hang out and see if there's anything you can do or you want to pick up on anything.
Right.
So I got to New York, and just before I was getting ready to crap out of New York and come home, I was walking down the street, and there were some guys, singing a cappella on the corner by a package store. So I stopped to listen, and one thing led to another, and I started singing with him. And after it was all over, the guy that was singing bass introduced himself to me, and he was telling me his name was BJ.
BJ Jones, I know him a long time.
and he asked me if I knew about the group called the Doves. And
right.
The Doves, man, I used to, you know, that was our favorite warm-up song. We used to warm up on the Doves and all of my groups back here.
You bet.
And he told me that they were, you know, Cleve was putting a group together, and he asked me if I wanted to come down and audition.
Wow.
And I said, yeah. So he took my number. I really didn't expect for him to call. But about a week or so later, I got a call, and he told me to come on down.
Wow.
I went down, and I auditioned, and here we got talking.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I used to go to United Group Harmony Association, you know, with Harmony Street and everything, you know, and then you could see BJ on any given night, man, filling in for like almost anybody. Of course, you know, he would sing with the Persuasions, and you know, and BJ, when I want to do my BJ imitation, I go, "How do you like me now?" "How do you like me now?" Yeah, that's BJ. It's funny, man.
He's a great guy. I mean, he's talking to everybody.
I know that. I mean, you know, he's got a lot of stories to tell, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a fabulous opportunity all of a sudden because, you know, when you think back, and when I was a kid, for some reason, my ear took me to the R&B sound, and I listened to, on that little transistor that my mother gave me when I was a kid, maybe 6, 7, I found all the R&B stations, and I knew all the words to all of the tunes by the harp tones and the Doves and the chords and the, you know, and I didn't know how those lyrics got in there, but that's apparently what I listened to. And I, by the time I was 14, 15 and we were singing on the corner, I knew every lead to every, you know, slow R&B tune. And I realized that, you know, it was like ingrained in me at that point, you know, for some reason. Now, when I was a dean, I was in a tough school in the Bronx in Castle Hill, and I had Jimmy Keyes' two sons, Jimmy Jr. and Paul Keyes, and they weren't really great kids, you know. He was in my office like every other week, you know, your kid did this, your kid did that, whatever. And then I used to hook him for career day, and he used to get up and tell how, you know, Shaboom died on the R&B charts with the chords, and then all of a sudden the Crew Cuts came out and made millions of dollars and millions, you know, and they just got kind of passed over, never got their royalties, never got what they needed. And, you know, it was kind of a tragic story because I was supposed to take him up to Connecticut to be on Johnny B's show, as a guest. I was going to pick him up, have him stay at my house, and he died like a week before he was supposed to do the show. Jimmy. And, you know, he's a good friend. But going back, and the reason I mentioned him was the guys that sang the R&B in those days, they didn't reap the benefits that people were used to nowadays. I mean, you know, they wrote such wonderful tunes. The tunes were either covered or the record company gave him a raw deal. And, you know, that's why the kids of now that are doing music, they need to respect the people that were there that paved the way for them.
Yeah.
You know, that's
exactly
my speech. You know, I mean, and that's why it's so important that the music go on and we pass it down to the new generations. It just needs to be. I mean, I feel really strongly about it. You mentioned the Ink Spots. Now, Terry Stewart is a good friend of mine. That's a long story. When Harmony Street, we did the White House, we would entertainment for Bill and Hillary at the White House. And, Terry Stewart, I became friends with because he was aware of that. And, we were talking about the Ink Spots, and I was talking about Billy Godwin. You know Billy?
Yeah.
Yeah, Billy sang. I actually got his name into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because they had kind of passed him up. So I hooked him up with Terry, and they said, yeah, well, you know, we've researched all, you know, your contributions and everything, and I think, you know, we're gonna add your name. So that was a good thing, because, you know, there were about 200 or 300 guys out there that all claim to be ink spots, you know.
Yeah.
Like the Platters, you know.
Yeah, matter of fact, I don't know which Platters is showing up. We're working with the Platters tomorrow in Waterford, Connecticut at some state park.
Well, I would assume that, you know, Herb Reed still has some of the guys that work with him. Of course, Wayne Miller. I'm sure you know Wayne. And Wayne and I call each other cuz, because we're both Millers. But, you know, Wayne was with Herb for a long time. Something tells me it's that group. I don't know how it wouldn't be if it's in New England, you know.
Yeah, so I'm kind of interested to see who's going to, you know, who's going to be there.
Yeah. Well, if it is Wayne, tell him I said hello, because, hey, and as a matter of fact, Wayne's been in a lot of movies lately, you know. He's getting these bit parts in all these movies. He's been doing that for about 2 or 3 years for some reason. He's got that face, so, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's cool. Here's BJ, and you run into him, and all of a sudden he's telling you that Cleveland is putting together a new version of the Dubs.
Hi, this is BJ Jones from the Dubs. Cleveland's still in the Dubs, and you're listening to my buddy, Mr. Mike Miller, DJ Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show, right here. How you like me now? I hope you like Mr. Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. Bye-bye.
And so what happened from there? You're probably running around going, wow, this is this is a good situation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying, like, okay, I knew the job. I mean, like, coming up as a kid, every group that I sang with coming up as a kid.
Right.
Chapel of Dreams.
Right.
And Magic, and Could This Be, you know, Please Don't Ask Me to Be Lonely.
Right.
That was always in the repertoire, you know.
Yeah, and those are not easy tunes to sing either. Every one of them, you got to show up in order to sing every one of those tunes.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
I know that to be a fact.
My dear, my heart's all aglow. Could this be magic, loving you so? Could this be magic, my above? I thought that it would be just a memory to linger in my heart with pain. But to my surprise, I opened up my
So when you got there, tell me about how that went down. I mean, I'm really interested in that. So you got there, and of course, Cleveland was there, and BJ was there.
BJ, Steve Brown,
right?
The original tenor from the Charts.
Right.
That did Desiree.
Right. So, okay, and Steve Brown was there, and were there other guys there to audition, or was it just your night?
Yeah, it was John Truesdale.
Oh, okay.
There, and there was another guy there. I can't think of his name.
Right.
But anyway, they had the group together.
Right.
You know, but I guess for some reason BJ thought I had it. I had what they needed, and he convinced them to let me come in and audition.
Right.
So I came in and I auditioned, and that was it. They heard me, and the next day BJ said, "You want to be in the group? They want you." And
wow.
That was it.
And that was in the 80s, right?
83.
Oh, wow. So that was quite a while ago. You had to embark upon learning all of the Dubs hits one by one. And, you know, the good thing about the Dubs was that even their B-sides were great tunes.
Yeah. Well, see, now the funny thing about it was, though, when I first came in there, the only songs I really had to learn were Magic,
right.
Chapel.
Right.
Be Sure of My Love. Maybe there's about five or six Dub tunes that I had to learn.
Right.
Because in them days, there was we were doing the nightclubs and all of that.
Right.
So we had the whole mixture of doing, you know, a whole lot of other songs.
I got you.
So we only actually did about five Dub songs.
Right. And then
what happened was about a year or so into the group, we got a call to go to Pittsburgh to do a show in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And then the guy called in from Pittsburgh, you know, to get the repertoire and stuff together. And I'm thinking that we're going to do the regular nightclub show.
Right.
And all of a sudden, this dude says, "Okay, yeah, now I know you're going to do this song, Magic." I said, "Yep." And then he started naming off the songs. You know, all of a sudden, he started talking about, "And you're going to be doing Beside My Love,
right.
Sure My Love."
Right.
And he started naming off all these songs. And I'm playing. I didn't want to play stupid, and I'm saying, yeah, of course we're going to do
right.
it. Do Darling, and Is There a Love for Me? And
right.
You're Free to Go. And I'm saying, yeah, yeah. And we finally hung up, and the next day I went to Cleve. I said, "Cleve, man, I'm, you know, this guy, he's talking about, you know, us doing this song, this song, and this song, and this song. What is he talking about?"
He says, "Well,
yeah, those are..." You know, Cleve said, "Yeah, those are all the songs
yeah.
that we did back in the day."
Right. Know? He wants the Dubs.
He wants the Dubs. They wanted nothing but Dub songs.
Wow.
So they wanted two 45-minute sets.
Wow.
Nothing but Dub songs.
Wow.
You know, I'm saying, and I had no idea that the Dubs had all that material.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Be Sure My Love, I mean... That's such good stuff, you know.
So I mean, I had to wind up going down to Colony Records,
yeah,
and going down to get some old CDs of the best of the Dubs, and coming up with all the.
That's
and
funny.
That's when my education of the Dubs really began.
Wow.
I started listening to this stuff. I mean, I always have respect because of Magic and all that stuff.
Right.
But then I started listening to You're Free to Go and Beside My Love.
Right.
Is There a Love for Me? And I'm saying, damn, you do. You know.
You're free to go.
You're free to go.
Dear, I've done the best I could. You're free to go.
You're free to go.
If you really feel you should, I love you so,
love you so much.
Much more than you ever know. You're free to go.
Along, but then oh well,
say goodbye and hurry on,
That's funny. That's when it first dawned on you what shoes you had to fill.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was like, oh, man.
Yeah, but you want to know something without making you blush or anything? You do it very well. I mean, the group, it's a very tough group to get out there and say, hey, you know, we're the Dubs. The lineup, and like I said, I've worked with you and I've seen the group so many times. The group is great, and the group carries on the tradition of the Dubs and hasn't lost a step. So, I mean, and I think you know that.
Oh, yeah. We've definitely been blessed. There's a chemistry, you know, there's a chemistry there that just, like I said, that maintains that tradition of the Dubs and that whole style of, you know, that R&B sound.
I mean,
we're blessed. We have that chemistry.
But
it's a blessing.
It's nice when people buy the ticket and you know that they're buying the ticket because they know they're going to see you and everything else. But then when they get there, you know, it's a big responsibility because they want to hear it the way they remember it. And I know how critical they are. They'll even come up to you after the show and there are guys that will say, hey, you know, on the record, the first tenor did this and you guys did that. I mean, that's how critical these people are. I know how they are. Some of these guys.
Yes, they are. There are those in the crowd and they will tell you, they will come back after the show and in their own way let you know that they know how things exactly were.
Well, didn't Richie Blandon do that in G, and I think you guys are doing it in F, or whatever it is, you know. Whatever it is, you know, they're going to tell you about it. It's all good. You did something that I really have to respect, because I was, as I say, a dean in the Bronx for all those years. And we were in the Castle Hill section. I was at 127 Castle Hill Junior High School. And we even had Jennifer Lopez one year that she doesn't cop to it. She says she went from Catholic school right to Preston Academy, but she didn't. She spent the year with us. It was a tough neighborhood. But then you went and got your master's in childhood education and started to do that, which is fabulous.
Yeah. Like I said, I back here in Massachusetts, I had the background of working, you know, of working juvenile justice and working with kids.
Right.
So I hung around my small paradise and, you know, and stuff. And there was a priest at St. Philip's Church. He was a Vietnam veteran.
Right.
I was a Vietnam veteran. We got to talking. And anyway, there was a position in their after school program at the daycare center.
Right.
So he got me up there and he got me a job working there in the after school program, working with kids.
Right.
And what happened was the kindergarten teacher on the preschool side got sick and they asked me if I would fill in while she was out. And I did, and she had an extended leave of absence. And
right.
I got kind of hooked, and I got hooked on literacy.
Wow.
The whole idea of literacy.
Wow.
How to read, and so they asked me if I wanted to, you know, take over the kindergarten class, which meant I would have to go back and pick up my master's, which I did, and I specialized in literacy development.
Wow.
I really got turned on to teaching kids how to read and that whole process.
Wow. So, you know, because I know how the education thing is, but then you also had to learn songs like Bluebird, and you also had to learn how to do Streets and Alleys, and you had to learn all the kindergarten games, which, you know, that's how you hook them, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a different kid nowadays. I mean, a kid nowadays, as opposed to a kid 25 or 30 years ago, these kids are, it's a totally different child. They're really hip, you know.
Yeah. I mean, technology has, you know, I mean, coming out of the womb, it's a whole nother kid.
A kindergarten child nowadays is like, is like a 12-year-old, you know, 25 years ago. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, you know, I'm a firm believer in getting them early. When I was a dean for all those years, I always say the biggest pains in the asses were the administration and the parents. If you lock a good teacher in with a class of kids and he shuts the door, that's between he and his kids or she and her kids. What used to get in the way were the parents and the administration.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I was really lucky. I mean, that's why I stayed and did what I did, because I had a director that trusted me, and she just let me do. I was good at what I was doing because I was good at what I was doing.
Right.
She let me do it. She let me do it.
Right.
And I had the backing of the parents.
Right.
I mean, I was, you know, I just, you know, I, like you said, I could just close the door, and it was just me and the kids.
We had
a ball, and we learned. I mean, I had a waiting list there. You know, I had parents coming to our center, you know, trying to, you know, get their kids into my class. You know, I had, not to toot my horn, but, you know, word spreads.
Right.
I definitely had the parents behind me, and my director was behind me. Anything I needed, she went and got for me.
Wow.
At the end of every year, we'd sit down and we'd, you know, say, well, what worked, what didn't work,
and what are you
going to need in September to make things better? You
know? Right.
And I'd give her my list, and she'd go, you know, she'd fill it.
Well, you know, when I got out, things changed over the years when I was there. I mean, you know, and to be perfectly honest, when I first started teaching in the Parkchester area, we had the black bench and the white bench in the playground, and it was like really, okay, you know, during lunchtime, you know, black kids sat on the black bench and white kids couldn't go over and sit on it. You know, it was like a territorial thing, you know, for whatever reason. Then things changed and we started to get everybody. The Asian kids came in and the Italian kids and the Albanian. We had a big influx of Albanian kids. And then the Spanish kids came in. So at the bus stop after school, we had the Spanish gangs, but we didn't just have one Hispanic gang. We had the Cubanos, we had the Puerto Ricans, we had the Dominicans, and they all couldn't stand each other. Then we had the Asian gang. Then we had, of course, the black kids. You know, we had the Black Spades and the, you know, whoever. Then we had the Irish gangs. So that's the way it was, and they all had their little territories, but I would go out with the Hispanic kids, and we'd have auditoriums. I'd say, you guys should all be hugging and kissing each other. You're all Spanish-speaking. And, you know, here in this country, no, man, you know, he's PR, man. I'm down with Dominicans. It was very hard to, like, connect the dots. And one of the biggest problems was, not to get off the subject, but we were teaching the Spanish kids in Spanish, and I was against it because I thought, you know, all the other ethnicities come in, all the other kids come in, Italian and Asian and whatever, and they all had to learn the language. Spanish kids came in, we taught them in Spanish, and by the time they got to the 12th grade, they really couldn't speak English that well, and we weren't doing them a favor. We were just really slowing down their socialization. So, but of course, you know, that's the way it was. And, you know, we just had to deal with it. So towards the end, it got very tough. I was doing much more arrests and discipline and nonsense rather than curriculum and all of that stuff. And I don't know how it is now. I don't know if it's better or worse, but I know that I put in my 30 years and I have kids. Hey, listen, I'm on Facebook with the radio show. You don't know how many of my ex-students write me and tell me, hey, you know, thank you for this and that. A lot of them, I don't even remember what I said. But, you know, it was, you know, just kids that come back to you. And you realize that all the time you spent, it came back. And you know, it was worthwhile. And that's the stuff. It's between you and the kids. And that's it. It's a personal experience between you and your kids. That's my favorite. You know, and it's very, you know, God bless all the people that give in that way because they have no idea what teachers do. they save lives every day, teachers. They save kids' lives.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know,
definitely.
I mean, that's just definitely how it is. I'm holding in my hand, and it's a CD. And it says, Nathaniel Leslie Anderson, Mixed Bag. And that's a production that's all Leslie. And tell me about that CD.
Never thought that fairy tales come true, but they come true when I'm near you. You're a genie in disguise, full of wonder and surprise. To shine on you so I'll know where you are. Order rainbows in your favorite shade to show I love you, thinking of you. Write your name across the sky.
Okay, well, that was actually my second solo CD.
Right.
And Mixed Bag is just, I just wanted to do something, like you said, you know, being on the doo-wop circuit, so to speak, you don't have the opportunity to do a lot of things other than doo-wop.
Right.
So I just wanted to do a CD and do something that was not just doo-wop. I wanted to be able to kind of like stretch out and demonstrate and show that I could do other stuff. You know,
right.
Like I like music. I like music. I mean, to me,
right.
I like a good medley.
Right.
A good medley, a good lyric. I mean, I don't care what the genre is. So that Mixed Bag is me doing a little bit of jazz, some doo-wop, some pop, some Broadway. A little bit of
right. Well, this is pretty spread out, you know, because Sending the Clowns, you know, that's, you know, fabulous tune. Bridge Over Troubled Waters, it's a tough one to sing. And, you know, believe it or not, Paul Simon was a mystic for a while. That's a whole other story because I sang with them. That's a whole story. Maybe we'll get to that. Goody, goody.
Hey, man, who's that walking down the street? Why, is that you? You look like you've been crying. So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how it feels. Goody, goody. So you gave him your heart too, just as I gave mine to you. And he broke it in a little pieces. So now how do you do? So you lie awake, you're singing the blues all night. Goody, goody. So you think that love's a barrel of dynamite. Ooh, hooray and a hallelujah. You had it coming to ya. A goody, goody for him. Goody, goody, goody for me. And I hope you're satisfied, you rascal, you. You met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how it feels. Goody, goody. So you gave him your heart too, just like I gave mine to you. And he broke it in a little pieces. And now how do you do? So you lie awake just singing the blues all night. Goody, goody. So you think that love's a barrel of dynamite. Hooray and a hallelujah. You had, I said you had, you know you had to come to me. Goody, goody for him. Goody, goody, goody for me. And I hope you're satisfied. You've been taken for a ride. And I hope you're satisfied, you rascal, you.
On out of here, the bad girl.
And let's see, Bet You By Golly Wow, that goes in another direction, you know. So I mean, this, the CD is pretty spread out. What do you remember the year that you did this?
It had to be about 99 2000.
Okay, because when we did the show with the Dubs in Waterbury, it had to be in the mid-90s. And you were selling CDs in the lobby on the break, and I don't remember which CD it was, because I remember you flew up to the top, and I walked over to you, and you had the Dubs CDs over here, but you also had your Leslie CD next to it, I remember. And that stuck in my mind. Yep.
Yeah, that was All About Love.
Right. I do remember that, because I remember you flying up to the lobby, you know, on the break. Because we had just, when we did the Harmony Street and whoever, it was at Kennedy High School. The MC was Johnny B., John Bunnell. You probably remember. And we opened the show. We did like 90 minutes. And then you guys, but I remember you flying up to the lobby. I remember looking over at the CDs, and there was the Dub CD, and there was your CD. That was probably the original one. So let me ask you a funny question now. What's your favorite Dubs tune?
Believe it or not, it's hard. That's a hard question.
I know.
But when it comes down to it, though, I'm partial to Wherever You Are.
Uh-huh.
I cried my heart out. I wished on a star. I swear I love. Just brings is, I don't even know where you are. Although you've been gone, this love lingers on with the beating of my lonely heart. I'd search the seven seas, no matter how far. I'd give the world to be wherever you are.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, but out of all the songs, that I'm partial to that one.
Right. Now let me ask you a question. Now, when you actually joined the group with Cleveland Still, Richard Blandon was still singing at that time, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He still had his lineup.
Right. Because, you know, that happens so often. I mean, even, you know, there were two Mystics groups and there's two Tokens groups and there's two, you know, and my feeling is when you get right down to it, it's all about the music. You know, people want to come and they want you to take them back to that place that only you can take them. As you go down the list of all the Dubs tunes, I mean, it's got to be so much fun to be the Dubs and get out there and just go from one to another to another.
In the chapel of dreams, chapel of dreams, there's a dream there for you. Through the dark of the night, though as strange as it finds delight in the chapel of dreams.
Chapel of dreams
was until I found this chapel of renown. I searched and searched for peace of mind. I'm glad that at last my empty days have passed. Now I worship at its shrine. It is heaven to know just what happiness means. It is found at the door in the chapel of dreams.
Chapel of dreams
was until I found this chapel of renown. I searched and searched for peace of mind. I'm glad that at last my empty days have passed. Now I worship at its shrine. It is heaven to know just what happiness
in the chapel of dreams.
Chapel of dreams, chapel of dreams, chapel of dreams.
There were just such great songs to sing, and it's not like there's one or two tunes. Some groups get out there, they got one or two tunes to choose from, and they sing everybody else's stuff. When the Doves exactly. get out there, I mean, the choices that you have, whether you're doing your 20 minutes in a big show or whether you're doing just, you know, a whole night of Doves, it's great material to sing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that was the whole thing back then when we first got that call to go to Pittsburgh.
Right.
Prior to that, you know, I would only do 3 or 4 dub songs a night.
Right.
You know, next thing I know, I'm in Pittsburgh and I'm doing 2 45-minute shows.
Right.
With nothing but dub songs, and we're not repeating one song.
No, I hear you. Now, you guys, you did PBS, right? You did the PBS special shows, right?
Yeah, I think we did 3 of them.
Right. Yeah, no, that's very cool. I want to talk a little bit. The last time I saw you, as a matter of fact, we were on a cruise, and my wife and I actually went on the cruise and we bought a suite. But because I was there, I brought some of my tracks and I was doing a little singing. And I remember that was actually the Brooklyn Bridge. It was really the first big show that they did without Johnny, and they had Roy Michaels with the group. And I think Grace was there on that cruise.
Okay, yeah.
You remember that. That was
yeah.
Cheryl's cruise. And we had Joe Billingsley was there, and Jimmy Jay was there, and I was there. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a moment where one of the drummers from one of the groups, they couldn't find him, and he was in the cabin. So Cheryl looked at me, and I ran up, and I grabbed the mic, and I said, who's going to help me out here? And so I grabbed you. I grabbed BJ, I grabbed Jimmy Rizika from the Bridge, and I grabbed Les Couchy. And we did, I was just calling them out. We probably did 5 or 6 acapella tunes in a row before the other group came on. And I looked around, and everybody says, yeah, I'm in, you know. And we just kind of called them out. And I wish somebody had run, you know, a tape recorder, because we actually cut a CD because when you're up there with that kind of a dream team, you know, it's like you just look at each other and you go bang and you sing the song. And I said to myself, I died and went to heaven. Look what I'm in the midst of. It was like a dream team thing, you know?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, ironical thing of it was the first time that Les and I and Freddie had sung together.
Right.
And like we did the hop, you know.
Right.
We just clicked. And also, Les and I were in Vietnam together.
Ah, so, see, I didn't know that.
Hi, this is Les Couchy, originally of the Del Santins and of Johnny Maestro and the Brooklyn Bridge. And right now you're listening to a dear friend of mine over the years, Mr. Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show. So keep on enjoying that good old doo-wop and rock and roll.
Yeah, we didn't know until we got back here and, you know, we were at a show.
Wow.
You were in the NAM. I said, yeah, who are you with? And we were both in the first half.
That's
the first time. We just didn't know each other.
Wow. And believe it or not, that was one of the last shows that Freddie Ferrara did, you know, because
actually,
he wasn't looking too great or feeling too great on that cruise. But I remember
on that cruise, because he had to work from a stool.
Let me ask you a silly question. Do you remember when we went to, I think was it in Cozumel that we went to that place that served the margaritas? Did you go to that place that afternoon?
No, we went.
I'm telling you, everybody got so sloshed at that place. I couldn't believe it, man. There were people doing things that you know, they would look you right in the eye and tell you that they weren't there, but they were.
Yeah. I begged out of heaven.
Nah, you were smart. you were like really, really, really smart. As far as the Dubs are concerned right now, what's the lineup of the group? Who's in the Dubs right now?
Written at the same ball is Cleveland.
Right.
Cleveland still.
Right.
John Truesdale.
Right.
DJ and myself. The same lineup.
Right. Same group you've been using for quite a few years. And how's Cleveland doing? Is he feeling okay these days?
Yeah, he's doing good. I mean, he's getting up there in age.
Right.
He works on the stool now. We make him sit down on the stool since he had his lung removed. We make him work from the stool. But he's doing good. He's still the original lineup. We just originally there was five of us. We lost Steve Brown.
Right.
He had a stroke, and we never replaced him. So it's still the original lineup, the same lineup that we started with 30 years ago.
Wow.
It'll be 30 years in October.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's really unbelievable. You guys are working regularly, of course. I mean, you know, there's still a lot. You see, the thing is, there are a lot of groups looking for work, but then you have that upper echelon of groups, and, you know, the Dubs actually are in that short list of upper echelon groups, and I'm sure you guys are still going out and shaking hands with a lot of people these days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're not working as much. I mean, times have changed.
Right.
But we're working pretty steadily. We're working pretty steadily. So.
Right. Let me ask you this question. You've been with them now, you know, you say 30 years. You are the official lead singer of the Dubs and have been for quite a few years. What would you say to fans of the Dubs who have followed you for all those years and are really just aficionados of the Dubs? What would you say to those people?
All I can really say is just thank you.
Uh huh.
With capital letters. You know?
Right.
Thank you, and we appreciate you. You know, I mean, it's been 30 years, and this feels like 10 years. They've been great, and we appreciate the support. I mean. I don't know. It goes beyond words. We're thankful and we are appreciative.
Right.
It's a hard journey.
Yeah.
It's a hard journey.
Now, I also have in my hand a CD, and it's called "Bringing Back the Magic." And on this particular CD, pretty much there are most of the tunes that we know and love. You know, that the Dubs have done, and also some tunes that are cover tunes, some of my favorites like Out of Sight, Out of Mind, and those kind of tunes. Of course, you know, You're Free to Go, that's a wonderful tune, and not too many people, you don't hear that tune too much on the mainstream oldie stations.
No.
You know, so, I mean...
Those are the songs that, you know, aficionados know. I mean,
oh, yeah. Let me talk a little bit about your wife. Now, is your wife in the music business as well?
Well, she does some booking things.
Uh-huh.
You know, she does that. Like, I have a daughter that's into fashion. She has a, just started publishing her own fashion magazine.
Wow. You know, I did something at Media Sound years ago. They were in the 70s. And I was involved that they had an album called Bionic Boogie, and there were a lot of people on it, but Sissy Houston was on it, and I remember in the studio sitting on a chair, you know, like sucking her teeth and whining the whole time was a young girl, she was about 13 years old, and it was Whitney Houston, and her mother said, you know, that's my daughter Whitney and everything, and, you know, Thelma Houston was on the album as well, and that's my daughter Whitney, she wants to be a model. You know, and she was sucking her teeth. When are we going to get out of here? And yada, yada, yada. And then, like, 4 or 5 years later, all of a sudden, you know, we heard this fabulous, cultured voice come out of nowhere and, you know, with 16 hits in a row and whatever. And I'm saying, yeah, this is the little skinny girl that wanted to be a model. So, you know, when you talk about your kids and, you know, that kind of thing, and they have their aspirations, you never know where they're going. You know, all of a sudden one day they say, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
My wife lives in Virginia. She does bookings. She works as an agent. She does bookings, and my wife, my daughter Asha,
right.
She has her, like, her, the name of the magazine is Tosser, T-O-S-S-E-R.
Oh, okay.
And, she's got her own website, tossermag.com, she just set up a something for me called Listen at SoundCloud.com.
Oh, okay, SoundCloud, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so she just hooked me up on SoundCloud.com,
yep.
On the band of Leslie Anderson, so you can hear some of my stuff. And
yep.
It'll also lead you to my wife's website and to her website. The whole family.
Gotcha. So you can find them on SoundCloud. Now, SoundCloud is SoundCloud.com. You know, it's more sophisticated than YouTube, actually. You know, it's a way to put your tunes on there. I have some things on there as well. Leslie, thank you so much for spending the time with me. I really look up to you, man, as a person, and I look up to you as a talent. I'm so jealous that you get to be the lead singer of the Doves, because what a fine group you have. But also, as a person, I've spent time with you, and you have that personhood, and you care about people, and it's just been a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, Mike, I'm glad that you called me. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And I mean, likewise. I mean, you don't have to look up to me, man. Like we've traveled this road together, you know, and I've got the same respect for you. You've done a lot. And in terms of keeping this music alive, so kudos to you too.
I appreciate that. You know, I always say to myself, you know, there's a big, beautiful beach, you know, and all of this music, you know, some of it is sandcastles and some of it are large shells and whatever. And I always say, I'm happy to be just one little grain of sand on this beach, on this big, beautiful beach. You know, like I say, some are shells and some are sandcastles bigger than others and some, but just to be one grain of sand with all the fabulous people that sing this music is like enough for me. But it's my pleasure to talk to you, and we'll be talking very soon.
Okay, good enough.
All right, thanks, Les. Okay, thanks.
Hi there, I'm Shirley Austin Reeves, the original lead singer of the Shirelles, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. Hi, Mike. How you doing, baby?
I'm doing great. I love you. Thank you.
Love you too, Mike.
We a pair. Me here at last on the ground, and you in midair, sending the clown. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around, and one who can't move. But where are the clowns? Just when I start opening doors, finally. Again with my usual flair, sure of my lines, no one is there, no one. Don't you love the farce? My fault, I fear. I thought that you'd want what I'd want. Sorry, my dear, but where are the clowns? There ought to be clowns. Quick, send in the clowns. When I stop opening doors, finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours, making my entrance again with my usual flair, sure of my life. No one is there. I'm all alone. Don't you love farce? It's my fault, I fear. But I thought that you'd want what I'd want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clowns? No, there ought to be clowns. Quick, send in the clowns. Send in the clowns. Send them over here, send them over there, send them everywhere. Just send in the clowns. There ought to be clowns. Don't bother. They're here. Don't bother. We're here.
Hi, this is Little Anthony, Little Anthony Imperials, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
You're free.
to see a grown man cry. You're free to go. You're free to go.
Hey, this is Mike Miller. I'd like to say goodbye from Harmony Street. Harmony Street.